Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years with 7 cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney, and over the last 2 months, we've been bringing you guests identified in the Solutionist Project, people who have come up with homegrown solutions to climate change, and Vivian Yelk-Mork is one of those people. Hello, Vivian. Would you please introduce yourself for our listeners?
Hawaiian, Sami, ka Chinese, ka Irish, ka Gwashe. As you know, that's Tlingit for hello. Just kidding. I guess before we speak, I did say cha'ade khanayu, which does mean please forgive me if I do anything incorrectly or if I say anything that offends anybody. In the Tlingit language, my name is Yeshk, or cute little raven. In English, my name is Vivian Mork. I'm a raven from the Raven Moiety, and I'm from the Tuktentan clan and a child of the Te Kwedi, or the Brown Bear people, and a grandchild of the Kagwantan, or the Wolf people. I'm from the Snail House. I was born and raised in Wrangell, and my Kawun lineage come in from Glacier Bay, from the Huna area, but I reside in Juno now, and I belong to a very large multicultural family. So I also carry the heritage of being Hawaiian and Chinese, Sami, Irish, and I don't know, I'll probably find out a few more things in life as I continue searching my genealogy.
What was the reference to Heinz 57?
Heinz 57, because I am also Chinese, Hawaiian, Sami, and Irish. So a lot of times it's a common metaphor in American English to tell people that they are made up of many lineages by saying, oh, I'm Heinz 57.
Oh, goodness, geez, I'd never heard that before. Well, thank you, goodness, geez, for being here today. And Yelk, you're an ethnobiologist. Would you please describe what that means and what it is that you study?
Yeah, I'm an ethnobotanist. And I actually wear a lot of hats. There's a lot of things I do. I'm not even just an ethnobotanist, I guess. I was very fortunate to have a lot of elders and family members teach me many things growing up. And eventually, as you get older, they tell you, you got to go to college. And eventually I went to college and found out I needed more college. And eventually... after many years of being a professional vagrant in life, probably about 8 years, and I went back to college, I eventually got a master's degree in cross-cultural studies with an emphasis in indigenous knowledge systems. And I have a certification from Rutgers University in biologically analyzing plants. And I wear a lot of hats. So I am a Tlingit language and cultural teacher. I am a traditional foods and medicine educator, traditional healer. And I've spent a lot of my life working for nonprofits and chasing grants around and developing beautiful programs that are done when the grant money is done. And quite a few years ago, I created a business called Planet Alaska. And we are a business with the purpose of perpetuating culture. We're a for-profit that has a business model of giving back to community every which way that we can. And we do that by using a portion of the proceeds to create sales for sustainable harvesting classes, language and cultural classes. We actually quite often create classes responding to the community that we're residing in. So sometimes classes look a little bit differently if we're making them in Sitka, if we're making them in Juno, or if we're making them in Wrangell or Huna, wherever it is that we're helping.
And what made you want to enter this field?
I had to enter this field because there is no job for me in the world. It doesn't exist. You know what's really great is the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium has ANMC up there. They have traditional healers embedded in their health system. Search here in Southeast Alaska does not have that as an option for people. So there are literally no jobs for traditional healers in Southeast Alaska. You have to make them. And in order to put that roof over your head and to pay for your student loans and all those things. So I guess necessity in some ways. And then even though I like to think that I'm a fairly pleasant human being, I also have a lot of opinions. And sometimes that is makes me difficult to employ. So I just enjoy being a business owner and I enjoy working for myself. And this last year, though, of course, like every other business owner in the world, you know, let alone Alaska, is having a difficult time transitioning with what that is. But luckily, we've been online pre-pandemic, so we had a little bit of a better chance at things, I think, in some ways. And we do our classes based on a gift-giving economy. So, we're a little unique in a lot of ways, even though we do have a lot of items inside of our shop that have price tags and things. We're actually a very negotiable business. And so, for instance, when we do our classes, people literally pay us what they need to or what they feel the time is worth. You know, there's people out there that pay us feeling that we should make more than your average guide in Alaska, since we're giving more than your average information and we're actually from here, you know. And then other people may be having an economic hard time, and so maybe they can't afford to pay us right now. And what they can afford to do is maybe they'll give us portion of their harvest, or maybe they promise to teach the knowledge to their grandchildren, or maybe they come back with one of their favorite pieces of art they made, or we're all about doing things a bit more traditional Tlingit style, I guess, than the Western business model.
What are some of the courses that you teach?
We teach a lot of things. We teach our language. I teach the Tlingit language. And then we also help other language teachers. So if someone comes to us with a really good idea and we can figure out how to help them, we love to try to figure out how to say yes. So if a Tsimshian speaker, a Haida speaker or something has an idea and comes to us, we try to help. We teach culture and history, but really often at my heart is food. I could eat my way across the planet. And I think that food is an exceptionally beautiful tool of cross-cultural communication. You know, just about every culture comes from people who say, oh, my grandma used to make this, or my auntie made this, or we used to grow this in my garden, or, you know. So I really love food and I love teaching people about our traditional foods and medicines here in Alaska because, you know, sustainability is a very trendy topic for the last decade or so. And, Indigenous people have been doing that better than anyone else on the planet for literally thousands of years. And when you look at Alaska Native cultures in comparison to other Indigenous cultures on the planet, we are up there among some of the oldest people to reside sustainably in one spot for thousands upon thousands upon thousands of years. Alaska Native cultures are older than the Roman Empire, we're older than the pyramids. And we really have successfully been able to manage our resources here sustainably to help support everyone for thousands upon thousands of years. So, what we like to do is to teach people some of those sustainable harvesting tips and tricks so that we get to be here for another 10,000 years. Gardening and farming are good ideas. And they are important, but they can't be the only answer because it sure does take a lot of acreage to grow enough carrots to feed, let's say, the city of Juneau. You know, if you were going to feed 35,000 people a carrot a day, that'd take a lot of land. So I like to approach food sustainability with tending what we already have first, both in the ocean and the forest, because that is exactly what native people have done for thousands of years. So And like many Native educators in the world of food, I've kind of gone through cycles in my life of, there's certain knowledge that you kind of want to protect because we've seen our knowledge misused, especially when it gets translated to commercial ventures. And so we get a little guarded of it. But when it does come down to it, I wholeheartedly feel that we should be teaching people how we have survived here for thousands of years and how to be able to give that knowledge in a way that helps others who have moved and immigrated to this land that's been ours for so long. They love it too, and we want to help them love it.
What is your approach to teaching people and sharing your knowledge about tending the resources of the ocean and the forest and the land?
Would you ask that again?
What is your approach to teaching? How do you hold courses? I have a lot of questions about how that may have looked after the pandemic, but what's your usual teaching style when you have people come to you that want to learn or you're offering a course?
Yeah, I'd like to say there is no more usual. We just threw that out the window. Luckily, I have a personality that's fairly adaptable. It was a little painful in the beginning, for sure, like a lot of people. But I got over it and adapted pretty quick. So before, we definitely had more of a structure because the entities that we partnered with definitely demand that. For a long time, I've been running grants for different organizations, and they get excited because they're like, oh, you're a traditional foods and medicine educator. Oh, not only do you have the traditional knowledge, also you have the Western degree. And then they'll hire me to manage some grant, and I get into the office, and then nobody listens. And the next thing you know, we're planning plant harvesting classes for October when the plants aren't up, And those are things that it kind of bothered me for the last 20 years with teaching. And so one of the nice sides for being my own entity is that I get to plan harvesting classes at the right time of year. And that's really nice. We have just recently kind of turned our whole business model upside down, and I decided simply whoever comes across our path are the people who are meant to be there. Previously, we had been expanding on the visitor population increasing here in Southeast Alaska, since we do have a lot of visitors that come. And cultural and heritage tourism was at one time the fastest, largest growing sector of tourism that was growing. So there really is a lot of people who are looking to connect with the local people who live somewhere and all the knowledge that we carry. And we were going to offer tours at the time that when people purchased those, they would know that their money was funding local education and local cultural preservation and perpetuation classes. And then all of a sudden the visitors stopped coming, And so, I like to approach the model of our classes with the gift-giving economy so that people can pay as they afford, because sometimes maybe an entity has more money than an individual, or maybe somebody decided that day that it made their whole year or their whole month and they decided to be generous, or maybe people can't. Even though they want to, So we like to not have to tell people no in that regard and be able to have the classes be open to the people that come to us. So we leave our classes very small. And we did that pre-pandemic. Even in your mainstream education system, you do have small class sizes are always better for both children and adults. And so we get better knowledge that way. So I kind of like how the pandemic pushed us to remain small classes, because there are a lot of entities out there that really want to push to have us each teach 20, 30 people in one class, and it's just not as pleasant as, 8 or less. So, to find us, people find us organically through the dozens upon dozens of articles we write, both for the Juno Empire and for ourselves online, under the name of our business, which is Planet Alaska. And we've been teaching about sustainable harvesting now for decades, and then writing for the Juno Empire for a couple of years now, and then our blog online. And then So definitely a lot of word of mouth, and we really like that approach because the people that we end up work with, we have long-term relationships that really turn into lovely friendships over time. And we partner with entities, and we partner with, like here in Juneau, we partner with Tlingit and Haida or Sea Alaska or the Zach Gordon Youth Center or just anybody. Come say hello. If you have a good idea, we love to share with others. And we do a version of small in-person classes. And before the pandemic, we were lucky and got to travel all around Alaska, partnering with other entities to help teach in different regions for sustainable harvesting. I used to work as a health educator for CERCH, and we used to help organize the Alaska Plants as Food and Medicine Symposium for health professionals up in the Anchorage area, and then it kind of sistered off to other areas of Alaska. And so now, last year, we helped organize, along with Sustainable Southeast and Spruce Root and a variety of CASE training and a few other entities, we got to help organize Alaska Plants Symposium last year, and we get to do that again this year. So we are doing an in-person physical distance harvesting symposium on May 15th and 16th at the Methodist campground out the road here, and people can simply send us an email at planetalaskastore@gmail.com or simply Google Planet Alaska and find us that way if you forget the email. And send us an email and pick a time to sign up for one of the small group activities. And before it and after it, we do a program called Hike, Harvest, and Heal, because I truly believe that if we hike together, we harvest together, we heal together. And that is embedded in a lot of our Alaska Native cultures in every way. And it's just a very healing thing to be able to gather together. And what I love about Alaska is we have so much space that we can do that safely outside together and be able to protect our elders and things who are out there helping us give knowledge to others. So definitely organic for us is the best way to go. It allows things to be more personalized to people. So we are willing to, you know, we're willing to take one individual out. You know, we take people who suffer from different anxieties. We take people who have different levels of foundations of health. We also are willing to take a little bit larger groups, and we do Zoom as well. Now we are slowly getting towards adapting to the world of Zoom. Honestly, as a traditional foods and medicine educator, one of the things that has bothered me for many years is that there are a lot of people who go to online to learn, and they get a lot of misinformation. And unfortunately, that misinformation can actually cause you serious illness or death of your own personal self or destruction of land and plants if some of the other knowledge isn't available to people, you know. And so I've been a very big supporter and promoter of hands-on learning from people who have learned for thousands of years in the area versus online. But as we adapt over time, of course, we have to give out some of that information online. But I'm still definitely a pusher of let's get together in person and harvest intimately and together online, in person, sorry.
Well, Ganeshchish, thank you for all of that information. May 15th is your symposium, and before and after
May
that.
15th, yeah, May 15th, May 16th is the in-person larger symposium that people can sign up for. And for any of the personal classes beforehand, you can just send me an email and sign up. And the odds are it's easy enough for I'm adaptable to people's schedules. And also, if people are willing to join small groups of others, then we can easily work that kind of thing out.
I think it sounds lovely. And with spring just on the verge of exploding, I'm sure there's lots that you're looking forward to harvesting in a couple of weeks or
Yeah,
over
and
the
even
next
though
few weeks?
we're here in Juneau, it means that our plant symposium is now going to be able to reach other communities here in Southeast. And I'm going to transition to Wrangell in at the end of May after the symposium. So we'll be doing some more classes in that neighborhood. And I'm going to join my mom's bubble with my grandfather. And we're going to continue to expand our online presence, I guess. I'm nervous because I don't like being in front of a camera, but we're getting over that slowly with this new world.
Jelk, thank you so much for being here today. Gnocchi, I could honestly talk to you for another hour about all of this stuff, but maybe I should just sign up for the symposium. But thank you so much
It
for
sounds
sharing all
like
this today.
Yeah, it sounds like we're going to sign off for now, but I wholeheartedly feel that in the realm of being a climate change solutionist, it starts with home, and it starts with making sure we tend what we have and we make careful considerations as we grow and we balance everything.
I agree wholeheartedly. I'm very glad that we were able to connect today and that I was able to be connected with you through this Solutionist project and through this interview today. So,
All
again,
right. Thank you for having me. Gnascheesh.
Gnascheesh. Thanks for your time.